Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 3rd, 2017. Can you believe it? And today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
We're marching forward.
Marching in line. So it was 60-mile-an-hour winds today, clear day, right? But I went out running at lunchtime, and it was, you could barely run through. It was cold because the wind was so high. And all I could think of was my sainted Irish grandmother saying, March, in like a lion, out like a lamb. So hopefully the end of March will be nice and mild. But curious enough, the end of February had a 70-degree day in it, didn't it? Right here in Boston.
Exactly.
We had this unbelievably warm day, which everyone took as a gift from God. Anyway, so DR, let me first of all remind everybody that this coming Sunday, March 5th, at Northeastern University is the Local Environmental Action Conference, co-hosted by the Massachusetts Climate Action Network and the Toxic Action Center. Please sign up. It's localenvironmentalaction.org. Get in there. It's cheap. It's fun. You will be there or be square. It's a nice thing to visit, and I hope we see you there. We'll talk about more of that at the end. The other thing to mention, just in passing, DR, is that as our democracy teeters along the fault line of Putinism, today, well, first of all, let me say this, DR. I am so tired of Trump stuff and federal Trump. I mean, it's just so exhausting, right? But I guess this is where you have to hang in there. I hope we can find topics besides Trump mania. But most recently, and the reason we got to talk about it now, because it'll change in a couple of days, is that the Attorney General was recently revealed to basically have massaged the truth in his testimony before a Senate nominating hearing, a Senate hearing, about whether or not he has spoken with the Russians. The Russians, in quotation marks. That sounds like a 1960, that he spoke with the Russian ambassador to the United States, right? Let's just make them all human. So did you see that? I mean, what's the story there in 25 words or less, DR?
Yes, I heard Attorney General Jeff Sessions basically declare that he's going to recuse himself from any investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. He's basically swore up and down in the press conference that he did nothing wrong, but obviously he appears to recognize, at least to a certain extent, the appearance of impropriety. Obviously, he has no intention of stepping down, even though there have been vigorous calls for him to step down. And as Senator Elizabeth Warren noted on Twitter, he never should have been placed in that position in the first place. So we shall see just how long things go on. It just goes to show you again, you know, elections have consequences, as they say, and
good and bad,
especially when those elections are brought up result in somebody who didn't win the popular vote, you know, installing these sort of unqualified hacks who have sort of, at the very least, affinity for foreign governments, if not outright fidelity to foreign governments, you know, in charge of things.
Well, so you know, why is this in a climate podcast, right? Jeff Sessions, who has basically perjured himself in front of the U.S. Senate. The thing that caught my eye about it, I'm interested to get your reaction. The thing that caught my eye about it is that this afternoon, all right, so today is Thursday night, the 2nd, right? And this stuff happens so fast, right? So today, Sessions got in front of a committee and he said, oh, I can't really remember what I talked to the Russian ambassador about. It was so busy, you know, he just came in, we had a few vodkas, I kind of lost track of things. But then he said, oh, yeah, the Ukraine sanctions might have come up peripherally, right? And so for me, red lights start flashing, right? Because the Ukrainian saying, just to put this all in context, when Mr. Putin, the bareback horseback rider, right, mm-hmm. he invaded the country of Ukraine mm-hmm. and basically took half of it over. Mm-hmm. Our former beloved President Obama, in retaliation, put economic sanctions on Russia. And what mm-hmm. were those economic sanctions mostly related to? I'll tell you, DR, you can convince you can, if I get this wrong, tell me if I got. The Obama administration put sanctions on Russia that prevented the development of the Arctic oil fields, mm-hmm. which is where Mr. Tillerson and Mr. Putin were making winky eyes at each other, you know, how mm-hmm. and he got the Order of Lenin or something.
Order of Friendship.
The Order of Friendship. Okay, they don't hand out the Order of Lenin anymore, I suppose. That's where Tillerson and Putin were in cahoots, and Obama put the kibosh on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so now the secretary, the Russian ambassador just happens to bring up the Ukraine connection to the guy who's very likely to be a close advisor to Mr. Trump. And mm-hmm. it just makes the whole thing, the whole thing's about oil, right? We're back to
exactly.
it, right? Tell me, DR,
exactly.
did I get that story right? Or
I think you did. To quote a famous Samuel L. Jackson line from the movie Pulp Fiction, this is some repugnant stuff, so to speak.
I mean, it's so the whole thing is that, I mean, and the knock on Mr. Tillerson, who we'll get to in another show, but the knock mm-hmm. on Mr. Tillerson is that he became Secretary of State so that he could overturn the sanctions that prevented Exxon and Mr. Putin from entering the $500 billion deal to develop the Arctic oil. Right? Mm-hmm. So just so that you know, if you don't think there's anything at stake and you watch this stuff on TV and it's confusing, it is confusing, but there's real issues behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So we will watch with some interest as to what happens to Mr. Sessions, right? He is now claims to recuse himself with all virtue. Well, I was listening to somebody on TV saying how Mr. Sessions has got the Southern gentleman. Oh, shucks, you know, mm-hmm. we were just chatting, and I looked at the data. I think, you know, maybe I ought to pull myself out. And you guys are a smart lawyer, right? And he's mm-hmm. putting on an act. Anyway,
exactly.
We'll see how long Mr. Sessions lasts. Mm-hmm. Another thing that has happened in the last few days has been, well, actually today, I think, has been the approval of a guy who can dance with the stars. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rick Perry is now our Secretary of Energy, and this guy named Zinke is now, who is, I guess, Jared Kushner's best buddy, yep. is now in charge of Interior Department. But I heard on the radio, DR, tell me if you heard the same thing, that Rick Perry, I guess the scales have fallen from his eyes, and after actually finding out what the Energy Department does, he thinks it's a great place, and he mm-hmm. is embarrassed to have called for the abolishment of the Energy Department in 2012 when he had then forgot the name of the Energy Department. I mean,
oops.
Is the irony, like, beyond from the sublime to the ridiculous?
It is odd, to say the least. The Senate did vote 62 to 37, including some members of the Senate who apparently feel that it's not within their political best interest to resist any of Trump's appointees. The interesting thing, the Washington Post notes, quote, as Texas Governor Perry presided over a boom in all kinds of energy production, including wind power and shale drilling, many of his supporters cited that record as evidence that it could help a similarly wide variety of energy interests, unquote. You know, it's going to be very, very interesting to see if he has any motivation whatsoever to promote anything other than, you know, dirty energy, if he's going to promote wind, if he's going to promote, you know, yeah. as some argue, is a clean form of power, nuclear power. The Washington Post also noted that he basically seemed to grudgingly acknowledge that climate change was real, even though several years ago he wrote a book basically declaring it all bunk and citing mm-hmm. the climate gate nonsense. So I think Perry is going to be a fellow who's going to undergo at best intermediate scrutiny. He's not going to get the same sort of scrutiny that a guy like Scott Pruitt is going to get at EPA or Betsy DeVos at education. But Perry and also Zinke at Energy, he will be subjected to intermediate scrutiny, because there are going to be people who are going to wonder, you know, now that he's backed away from the most egregious form of denialism, is he going to acknowledge fully – and fervently that clean energy has a place at the table in terms of future energy policies.
Right. And I agree with you. I think that this discussion about how Governor Perry was so good for energy, in quotation marks, in Texas, the Department of Energy has done a lot of good things. We praise the DOE on this show for their clean energy initiatives. But the fundamental root reason for existence of the Department of Energy is for nuclear weapons and maintaining and understanding and running those nuclear weapons. And this Mr. Perry didn't even know that. And so it's just, and I find that people who say, oh, yeah, well, he's pretty good with energy. He'll be good at the energy department. They reflect a profound misunderstanding of what the department even tries to do, you know, in its most important responsibility. But I'll back off from ranting about Mr. Perry. I kind of hope, you know, since Perry seems, his convictions seem to kind of blow with the wind, and like nobody knew nuclear weapons were so important or so complicated, right? Maybe he'll figure something out and say, oh my God, we need to think about this more carefully.
And as always, you do have to wonder how long these people will last in the position. You know, will he get bored? Will he be essentially, somebody who has a dirty energy agenda that he ultimately can't implement because of pushback and resistance internally, similar to what is rumored to be going on with Pruitt. Mm-hmm. And will he just get so frustrated they sort of hightails it out early and basically says, oops, I shouldn't have taken this job.
Right, and then maybe we'll see who President Bannon appoints then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two other topics that I just want to briefly touch on the fact and just let everyone know who's been following this story that Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, who is a brave woman, is in collaboration with Schneiderman, the AG of New York.
Eric Schneiderman
from New York. And they have both rejected the subpoena from this guy, Lamar Smith, down in Texas, this subpoena that demanded that the Attorney General of Massachusetts turn over all her internal records to the House Science Committee so they could decide whether or not she was being unfair to Exxon. It's an outrageous act. It's an outrageous demand. And I think Maura Healey, God bless her, she said, you know, go. Put that subpoena in your pipe, Mr. Lamar Smith, and smoke it, because so you saw that, right, Dierre?
Yes. In addition, according to Inside Climate News, 15 state attorneys general they've written a letter to Congressman Smith urging him to withdraw the subpoenas, basically making the point that he really doesn't have jurisdiction to do this sort of thing, and that it's just, you know, intolerable and fairly disgusting that he's attempting to harass law enforcement officials who are trying to do their job because he doesn't like the job that they're trying to do.
I think it's something that,
he knows that if they expose what they're doing, you know, it'll do a job on Exxon.
I think there's something called the 10th Amendment, right, which leaves the states a lot of authority. Anyway, so God bless Maura Healey. The other interesting thing that I really wanted to chat about, DR, which I think you are aware of, is the following thing. That there's this guy named Daryl Issa, a congressman from California. Now, my memory, I could be wrong, but he was either an exterminator salesman or a car salesman before he ran for Congress. Now,
I think he sold auto car alarms.
Basically. Oh, it was Bono, I think, ran an exterminator. Anyway, you know, they're honest businesses, so I don't mean to disparage them. But Daryl Issa ran, and then he spent years torturing Democrats, and Hillary Clinton in particular, with all kinds of investigations, right? He was the guy who did it. He was the guy who ran the, what was the thing about the guns in Mexico?
Fast and Furious. The investigation of a Vin Diesel movie.
Right. He flogged that up and down. Right? Okay. Anyway, Mr. Issa, I guess, had a bit of a near-death experience that he won by a few percentage points, and he won by less. He won his district in this past election by less than Hillary Clinton won his district. Right. Mm-hmm. So that put the fear of the Lord in him. And this guy, Daryl Issa, after years of spitting conservative, you know, venomous conservative stuff, he has decided to join the Climate Solutions Caucus, which I found astounding. So tell me, yeah, first of all, can you tell me what is the Climate Solutions Caucus? I mean, what does that mean?
It's a bipartisan group of lawmakers in the House. It's explicitly in the House, or dedicated to working on common sense solutions to reducing carbon emissions. It now has 13 Republicans and 13 Democrats. They are committed to what is known as a Noah's Ark approach, whereby a member of one party cannot join unless they have a fellow member of another party who basically agrees to join along with them. And you're right that this is extraordinary considering Darrell Issa's track record. This is a gentleman who just a few years ago, he received one of these sort of I guess you'd call it like a Dirty Bird Award or something of that nature, similar to something that Scott, that 350.org, remember when they gave Scott Brown, they gave him sort of a Dirty Bird Award. Darrell Issa several years ago received one of those sorts of awards for his vehement denialism of science. And now he's had a conversion on the road to Damascus, so yes, to speak, yes. And he realizes that, you know, climate change is a thing and perhaps something needs to be done. Now, it's going to be interesting the extent to which he follows through on this issue, because obviously, you know, when he bears witness to some of the stuff that's going on in the executive branch, will he feel motivated to sort of condemn this, to sort of push back against this? You know, to his credit, Carlos Curbelo, the Republican co-founder of the Climate Solutions Caucus, he has criticized. Obviously, in terms of his rhetoric, he says certain things are unfortunate. It's not as sort of vehement as I would prefer. But he has pushed back against some of the executive branch denialism out there on science. It'll be interesting to see if Darrell Issa feels politically compelled to do the same thing.
Yeah. And number one, I agree. I mean, so we should watch whether or not this is a conversion in name only, right? But I just want to, you know, make clear that the Climate Solution Caucus is roughly analogous to the, what do they call it, the Freedom Caucus, right? Of all these crazy guys that want to tear down Congress, right? You'll hear that on NPR or whatever. The Freedom Caucus, they're 40 guys, they're in Congress, exactly. And 40 people, and they all get together and they plan out how to have the most impact for the issues they are interested in. So here you got the Climate Solutions Caucus, which is now, you said, 26 people, and they form a core, and if they decide they want something, they can push for it because they got a unity. And so that's the second point, is pressure works, right?
Exactly.
If Darrell Issa can see the light, right?
Yep.
That means when you call your congressman, when you complain, when you show up for protests, it matters. And in that vein, so DR, here I guess one suggestion is that if you're listening to this podcast, or as they used to say in broadcast days, you know, if you're within the sound of the range of my voice, right? If you're listening to this, go out and get 10 of your friends, or 5 of your friends, or 20 of your friends, have them all call your congressman and tell him or her to go find someone of the opposite party and join the Climate Solutions Caucus, right? Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? It would be beautiful. It would be wonderful. But I mean, that's the way to build it, right? Then you have a core of people in Congress who share views and can talk about climate as an issue. I guess I hadn't realized the, what did you call it, the Noah's Ark approach?
Exactly. Just think about it. If Congress goes green, the orange man in the White House will see red.
Oh, well, with that bon mot, we will have to stop. So let me remind everybody, go to the MCAN conference, go to localenvironmentalaction.org. It's cheap. It's fun. It's this Sunday. It's at Northeastern University's Curry Center. You should go. We'll put up links to some of the stuff we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can share us, let other people know about this show. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or most of the other podcast distribution apps. You can find us on iTunes. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.